Hey, everybody. This is Doug with Emotional Fair Journey. And once again, I'm here with David Fetter, psychotherapist David Fetter, I should say. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, the weather's been fantastic, and I'm getting ready for my ride to conquer cancer in 2 weeks.
So, that's right. I was going to ask you about that. So good. I hope that goes well, and you're a good man for doing that. So,
it's an important cause, and we've raised a lot of money, but so far we're still trying to find a cure for cancer, and hopefully every year we get a little bit closer. So,
Absolutely.
I appreciate, the support that everybody, has given to the cause.
Good. Excellent. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Today, I know we've kind of addressed it here and there on several of the times that we've talked about boundaries. So today our topic is going to be boundaries. We're going to kind of dig in deeper a little bit. And I thought what we would do today is I get either comments or emails or, people I'm talking with on the phone, constantly have concerns or issues with respect to boundaries. And so I thought what I'd do is we put together some that I've actually received from people. I think we got maybe half a dozen of them, some questions. So I'll just read them to you and then get your expert advice on them and hopefully give some people some good information that they could put to use. Sound good?
Sounds good. Yep.
All right. Here's the first one, and this is a little long, so bear with me. I have a question regarding boundaries. My husband has come back to me after a 2-month separation, which I insisted on because I wanted peace and quiet to reflect on what I wanted in our marriage after his affair. We've been married for 51 years now, and he had an emotional and physical affair with a so-called friend. We are going to try and work on reconciliation, but for me, the biggest problem is that he has texted the other woman twice that I know of during the 9 months since discovery. I have told him several times that this is unacceptable to me. For me, there has to be no contact whatsoever if we are going to work this out. In what form can I put a boundary in place rather than an ultimatum? Because to me, the ultimatum would be to leave him. I feel if I could put an effective boundary in place while reconciliation is taking place, I think we have more of a chance to get through this. Your advice would be appreciated. Thank you. Thoughts?
Right. Yeah, it brings up a lot of different issues and concepts and whatever. And I'll just, in addition to boundaries. So let me just touch on those first.
Okay.
First of all, this is a double betrayal. So there's a betrayal by her husband as well as by, as she, puts it, a so-called best friend. And certainly when there's two betrayals, and when the affair is with a friend or someone known to the person, it is extremely hurtful. Even more difficult to overcome. So with regards to boundaries, when there is a double betrayal, there is often a need for boundaries, not only with the involved spouse, but also involving the friend or in relation to the friend. The other point that I wanted to mention is that something like this brings up for me when I hear about it, it brings up the issue of a therapeutic separation, which is an option that a couple may take when they aren't ready for, let's say, a formal legal separation, but they agree that a period of time apart would be, healthier and less toxic than staying together. A therapeutic separation is something that defines. And there's certainly boundaries within the therapeutic separation that defines what is to happen during the therapeutic separation or temporary time apart. So more specifically, the therapeutic separation outlines the way the both spouses will act and interact during this period of therapeutic separation. So So what would be included in that would be the length of the separation, how the bills will be paid during the separation, because typically the two spouses would be living apart during this time, although they, you know, some people have a therapeutic separation and they just sort of divide the house. But,
right.
How bills would be paid, access to the children during the separation, dating during separation, if there's going to be any counseling during the point this time of the therapeutic separation agreement. And with regards to, during the period of the therapeutic separation, what people really, need to think about also is what is acceptable or unacceptable with regards to seeing other people or having contact with other people. So these are all important things that are included in a therapeutic separation. That is sometimes one of the healthiest boundaries that a person can or two people can agree on. But more specific to the issue of boundaries, this person who sent this in is asking about, it sounds like, boundaries versus ultimatums, if I read this correctly. And the important thing, here is that a healthy boundary is not, and I can't emphasize that enough, is not an ultimatum, although it may seem that way.
Right.
What a healthy boundary is something that defines how two people are going to interact. It defines what is acceptable between two people and what is not. When this person who sent this in says that the ultimatum would be to leave her husband, I don't hear that as an ultimatum. I hear that more as a consequence of her spouse's decision not to comply or agree with her boundary, with regards to how she wants to be treated or what is acceptable and what she feels would be helpful with regards to repairing the trauma in their long-term relationship. So. So that's really important, that it's she is establishing what she needs in order to move forward. It's all up to her husband. It's up to her husband as to what he wants to do with it. And depending on what he wants to do with it or what he chooses to do with it, then she will react. So not an ultimatum, and not really control. He has complete control over what he does or doesn't do. She's just saying, this is what I need. So when we set a healthy boundary, we are not saying that the person must comply. And as I said, it's because the other person still gets to decide whether to live with the boundary established by that person. So there's still very much free choice. So that's why I draw the distinction between boundaries and ultimatums. They're very different. So for example, if this woman tells her spouse that her boundary is no contact, her spouse, her husband, still makes his own decision whether to have contact with the affair partner and whether to take the chance of what his spouse is going to do or how she's going to react. If he contacts the affair partner and his spouse, finds out or somehow, let's say, even if he tells her, and she exercises the consequence of ending the marriage, that is the consequence and not an ultimatum. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah. I think what I'm read from this statement, too, and maybe you can touch on this, is I think that I agree. I think she got her maybe terminology mixed up there a little bit, but I think what also I see is that she wants a consequence to her boundaries or ideas of consequences to her boundaries that don't involve leaving the marriage. You know, I think she thinks that is a last resort, but she wants to have some sort of effective boundaries and effective consequences and boundaries in place that don't quite go that far, but yet can kind of, you know, put her husband on the right track, if you will. Make sense?
Well, you know, what would that be? I mean, if
exactly,
you know, people do all sorts of things, and it has to fit. Like, you know, there's not one size fits all, and everybody has to look at their own situation and what they're able to follow through with. So, you know, so one example might be, you know, and I emphasize might be, doing something that is, you know, least intrusive to most intrusive. So, you know, this lady may feel that most intrusive is actually ending the marriage or you know, telling him to leave and going to see lawyers and legal separation. And, you know, to your point, that may be something she really doesn't want to do. I would, you know, encourage her to, you know, do some individual work to see why doesn't she want to do that, and why doesn't she want to state to her husband very clearly that, you know, if there's any contact with the affair partner, this marriage is over, you know, why she doesn't want to go there. But other things that she may want to do and other people have done is say, you know, if the two spouses are sharing, you know, continuing to share the bed, the same bed, the matrimonial bed, they may say, you know, if this is what you're going to do, then you're going to have to sleep in the basement. We're not going to sleep together. If we're not going to act as a couple, if you're not going to treat me as your spouse, I'm not going to act as a couple. I'm not going to do your laundry. I'm not going to cook meals for you. You know, people can do anything, you know, from beginning, from the left side of the spectrum to the right side of the spectrum, as to what is going to make a difference for her particular spouse. I have no idea. You know, because
right.
I don't know her spouse. I have no idea, you know, what is going to turn things around for him. But you raise a good point, because whatever consequence to a breach of the boundary, whatever consequences is set up, you know, the hurt partner needs to be able to follow through with it. Because
exactly.
If not, then her husband is not going to respect her or her boundary, or shall we say, there's less chance he's going to respect her or her boundary. So it's really a process, and she should really, I would say, be talking to someone who can either give her an objective opinion in her support, you know, whoever is in her support circle, or see a coach or a therapist to help her figure that out.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks for answering that.
No problem.
Okay, the next one. Hello, thanks for your messages. Do you mind me asking you about boundaries? My wife is moving out in late August. I could set some boundaries along the lines of remaining in separate rooms during the evening until she leaves, for example, but I get confused, as other literature I've read talks about trying to be loving and to rebuild the relationship for the future, be it as parents or as a couple. If I set boundaries, won't this make the building bridges impossible? I'm not sure what route to follow.
You know, before going into the issue of boundaries, there may be something else going on here with respect to self-esteem. And, you know, for anybody who's been through or found out that their spouse had been unfaithful, self-esteem is almost always takes a very, very hard hit. So,
sure.
And when we're talking about boundary setting, you know, it's pretty common. The common sort of belief is that in order to be able to set a boundary, the person needs to have a relatively good sense of their own self-esteem. So, you know, so before setting a boundary, a person who's suffering from a low self-esteem, they may need to do some work to improve that in order to be able mm-hmm. To establish boundaries. Because if the person isn't feeling worthy or deserving of being treated well, then that person's going to have a harder time to establish boundaries. So,
right. Good point.
So anybody who's suffering from a low self-esteem, they may want to do some work. There's plenty of self-help books on the market. But even better to do some work with the support of somebody who can help them with that. So as I said, I believe in the in the previous question, excuse me, I said that boundaries are intended to define how two people relate to one another. Boundaries, and I'll admit that back in the day, I used to think that setting up a boundary was a bad thing or a negative thing with another person, because it must be another way. If I'm setting up a boundary, I must be disgusted with that person, or I might be angry with that person, or what have you. Excuse me. But I changed my perspective on that, and I feel now that boundaries are established for positive reasons, because they're good, because, as I said, they define what is acceptable and what is not in a relationship. Also, boundaries are used to keep a person who has been hurt or traumatized by virtue of an affair, to keep them safe, which is really important for anybody who's been hurt in this way. They're not intended to control. And that, again, is a misinterpretation of boundary by a lot of people. It's not intended to control, because the other person chooses whether to comply with the boundary. And if they don't agree with the boundary, there is, as I said earlier, a consequence. The hurt partner is going to react, because you're not treating me in the way that I want to. At the end of the day, I get to decide whether I want to be in relationship with you, if you're going to make me feel bad about myself, for example. Mm-hmm. So, when I think of boundaries, and I think it's important for people to know that there are different types of boundaries. And some of the types of boundaries are non-negotiable boundaries, such as I need the affair to be over, no contact, as the other person in the first question wrote, no further contact with the affair partner. And these may be non-negotiable boundaries for the hurt partner. And if those are not agreed to by the involved partner, then, the hurt partner needs to make a decision. But those would be examples of what I would call non-negotiable boundaries. There's another type of boundary, which is physical boundaries and sexual boundaries, such as are we going to sleep in the same, are we going to stay in the same home? Are we going to sleep in the same bed? Are we going to be intimate with one another? Or when does intimacy begin after a betrayal? As well as do I need you and me to have tests for sexually transmitted diseases? These would be examples of, as I say, physical boundaries and or sexual boundaries. And the other type is emotional boundaries, which might, an example would be if the involved partner is in treatment, to try to figure things out and improve themselves as a person, and to improve the relationship. An example of an emotional boundary might be if there's a change in the involved partner's treatment plan, to make sure that they tell the hurt partner what those changes are, just so that the hurt partner is on the same page and sort of knows what's going on. If there's going to be further disclosure let's say if something was forgotten or something was withheld in the disclosure process about the betrayal, the affair, how is the disclosure going to be shared? So, you know, some people are going to feel comfortable and say, well, you know, just tell me. And other hurt partners are going to say, I'd like to do that in the context of therapy. You know, when we go see our couples therapist, I'd like to talk about it there just because it's, you know, it's hard to hear it and they may want more support. And the final thing about boundaries, you know, boundaries in relation to this question, boundaries are intended to make the relationship possible between two people. Unless of course the boundaries are not respected, the boundaries are not intended to burn bridges. So in this example, you know, if this guy needs, if this hurt partner needs for there to be more distance, you know, not sharing, can't remember if it was sharing the same room or what it was, but it's not intended to burn bridges. It's intended to keep him safe so he can recover. And, the hope is that the involved partner would be to, would be able to understand that. So my advice for this individual is for him to think about what is going to make him feel safe, what he needs, and to honor himself and to be honest with himself about what's going to help him move forward. Once he knows and he's able to define his boundaries, sharing them with his wife and explaining why the boundaries are necessary for him to have them in place, and then leave it at that. You know, like, I don't think that people should compromise what they need in order to feel safe and secure after a betrayal and experiencing the trauma of betrayal. I don't think people should compromise that because they are afraid of, you know, how the their spouse is going to react. You know, so really the important thing is boundaries are there to keep you safe. A person who's been traumatized, you know, is having a very difficult time. They should focus on what they need and less so on what their spouse may do in reaction to to setting those boundaries. I experience this a lot in the individuals and couples that I work with, and when they go down the route of saying, well, I can't do this because my spouse is going to react this way, or it's going to, burn bridges between us. You know, really, at the end of the day, what happens is these couples just stay stuck, and the hurt partner ends up continuously getting hurt. So,
Yeah, I think in this particular case, too, it seems that the woman, the wife, is who had the affair or is having the affair is moving out this month anyway. So I think he's trying more or less just to maybe keep the peace in the interim. So I think everything that you just mentioned is would be very helpful for him to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's what's not clear in the question is, you know, like I, you know, just as I was speaking about it in the first question, is this a therapeutic separation or is this the end of the marriage? Not knowing that makes the answer would be a little bit, or the response might be a little different.
Well, I know that I've actually communicated with this person, and it is not a therapeutic thing.
Okay.
Not even close. So unfortunately,
He's saying, if I set boundaries, won't this make the building of bridges impossible? So it sounds that even though it's a separation and not a therapeutic separation, he's still not wanting to, like, there's still some kind of connection that's going to continue.
He's holding out hope.
Kids or,
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Now this next one was actually, a comment that was on our blog to a article about boundaries from few years ago. And this person says, boundaries are great in theory, but mostly will not work unless the cheater wants to stop their affair. Same as an addict. You can bring them to rehab, but until they buy into stopping their drug use, it won't last or even stop the addiction or behavior. How do you respond to that?
I hope I read it, I'm reading this question accurately. This person, is speaking about infidelity and addiction, presumably sex addiction, in the same thoughts. And just to be clear, sex addicts, and this is very important, some sex addicts will act out by having an affair, but not everyone who has an affair is a sex addict. So you can't necessarily talk about addiction and infidelity in the same breath or in the same sentence. And it's important because it's an important point because the treatment and recovery is different for, people who may have a single affair but not be a sex addict, or even more than one affair and not be a sex addict, as compared to someone who is a sex addict. And infidelity is part of the acting out, their acting out behaviors. So with respect to infidelity, in the vast majority of cases, people have an affair because it feels good. And in most instances, the person in an affair will continue until they realize that there is a negative consequence to the choice they've made. In some instances, this is going to happen naturally and organically and on its own, where the involved partner will decide it's time to end the affair for whatever reason, and it could be a multitude of reasons. However, in other cases, the involved partner may need some help to get to that point. Quite specifically, for someone who's been having an affair for an extended period of time and has, quote, gotten away with it, either their spouse knew something was going on and they just decided not to go along with it, shall we say, for whatever reason, or the involved partner just managed to keep this a secret for, years. And there's a lot of people who have had very long-term affairs. So in order to get to that point of realizing, that there is a consequence, because someone in a long-term affair who got away with it may say, geez, I can do this. And my life isn't affected because my spouse doesn't know and whatever they're thinking. But again, boundaries define how the hurt partner wants to be treated, what is acceptable and what is not. Mm-hmm. So the involved partner doesn't need to stop. The boundary is not there to stop the behavior. The boundary is there to, as I said, protect the hurt partner. And if the involved partner fails to act in a manner that is healthy for the involved partner, then the involved partner reacts in a way that is healthy for them. So it's not, it's not to force the involved partner to stop doing something that is hurting the involved partner. It is to let them know, okay, there's going to be a consequence if I continue. Do I want to risk having to live with that consequence? Do I want to risk, if I'm not thinking, because I got away with it for a long time, and I'm not thinking about not having access to my kids or hurting my relationship with my children, and something changes because now, they see that there is a chance that my life is going to change, or they start realizing, geez, I could lose 50% of my assets or whatever, then they may make a different choice. They may make a different change, a change, and they may end the affair, but they may not. Mm-hmm. So it's not intended. I think when we set up a boundary, if we're setting up the boundary because we say, well, we're going to set up the boundary and it's going to result in a specific action on behalf of the involved partner, chances are we may be disappointed. But the boundary's for me, not for them. The boundary's for the hurt partner, not for the involved partner. The involved partner, you know, it may give the involved partner something to think about that they weren't thinking about before. It may give them a different perspective than they may not have had before. But it's not for a specific, you know, end that may not happen. It's to protect the hurt partner. That's what it is.
Okay. Wonderful. Great. Thank you. Okay. Next question here. I do believe in setting boundaries, but how do I do that without coming off as being controlling? I also feel that if I set too harsh of boundaries, that all they'll accomplish will be to thrust my husband back into the arms of the other woman.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we've already sort of spoken about
some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. The relationship between boundaries and controlling the involved partner. Because as I said, the boundary is not intended to control. It's intended to provide safety for the hurt partner. Furthermore, the involved partner still chooses how to respond to the boundary. And this would include when the involved partner, the involved partner making choice of going back to or continuing contact with the hurt partner. So it may happen, but if that is the involved partner's choice, then I hope somebody would help the hurt partner by asking them, what are you really saving? And help the hurt partner recover, get stronger, accept what is going on, and find a life where they will not allow themselves to be hurt further, but instead treated respectfully and well.
Mm-hmm. And that's a huge decision for people. And I can tell you that this reason from this particular comment or question is probably the most often that I hear from people as to why they have troubles or are struggling with setting boundaries is they fear that their spouse is going to just stay involved in the affair or go back or have a relapse or whatever. And so it's difficult. And, but I hear what you're saying.
Well, you know, I think that, I mean, this is a bit of a delicate issue, but I'm gonna go there. it's like if that's not the reason the involved partner may continue with the affair partner is not because of the boundary. It's because they choose to continue the affair. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like, well, if I test. If I do testing, I'm going to find more of the disease. It's not like that. The disease exists. So it's not like saying, well, if I set a boundary, then I'm going to push my husband or wife, the involved partner, back to the affair partner. It's just not like that. It's not the boundary that is making them go back to the affair partner. It's their choice to go back to the affair partner, which they would have probably made whether you have a boundary or not.
True.
So it's not the boundary. And again, this person is saying, you know, is living in fear and focusing on the wrong thing. You know, it's the boundary is to protect that person. The boundary is to keep that person from being re-traumatized over and over again. And if the involved partner is going to go back to the affair partner, then the hurt partner needs to decide what are they really doing there.
Right. Excellent. Okay. Thank you. Okay. We are on the last question here. Let's see. I have been trying for almost 2 years since D-Day to get my husband to live within certain boundaries, and just today I had to just give up. He always says he will, but the minute he has to make a choice regarding the boundary set, he chooses not to follow them. It has reached the point where the things I needed to feel safe became the very things that were tearing me apart. I can't even tell you how destroyed I feel and powerless. I just don't know what else to do. I guess I'm just tired of fighting a battle I will never win.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think ending off with this question is actually, it's a victory. Like it's actually taking everything that we've been talking about and putting it into action.
I like to say I planned it that way, you know.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Good for you. I mean, it sounds as though this person tried for a long time to get her husband, quote, to live with certain boundaries, end quote. And eventually she reached the point where the pain of continuing to try became unbearable because it was just too hurtful. The thing is, nobody, as I've been saying, you know, nobody can get a person to live within boundaries, and nobody should make getting another person to do that their life work. In those cases, the hurt partner is just, you know, trying too hard and going in the wrong direction. My advice is, instead of using all that energy to get your spouse to live within a boundary and to accept a boundary, instead work on your, you know, work on improving your self-esteem, so that living without your spouse, if that's what ends up happening, doesn't seem so frightening. I you know, just give this person a lot of credit, because she reached a point where she said enough, you know, where by saying enough, she imparted the message to her husband that she's a person who deserves to be treated respectfully and well, and basically, you're no longer going to treat me in a manner that makes me feel bad about myself. And that's an important point, because when we set a boundary and it's not respected, it's not honored, and we keep going back to the well, and we keep, you know, just another kick at the can, then what happens is we start to feel, you know, often more worthless and not desired and disrespected. And that makes us feel bad about ourselves. And it continues to wear at us and beat us down. So, you know, at the end of the day, what this woman did is tremendously healthy and very, very good for her. You know, the unfortunate part, and it's not a criticism of her, is that it took 2 years to get there. And 2 years is a long time to put your life on hold and to be in a one-down position. But, you know, life's a journey, and I do understand that, you know, people often need time and give it a lot of time to get to the point that this woman did. My hope is, and it's certainly one of my aspirations and ambitions in my practice, is to help people move and make these kind of moves quicker, so that the amount of pain that they're in and the trauma they feel is not protracted, but it shrinks to you know, so it happens quicker. You know, but by saying enough, and, you know, basically this woman took control of her life and took control of her life back, and gave herself the opportunity to start living again. So kudos to her, and I'm glad she got there.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. And I just want to add, too, that we're certainly talking about boundaries in the context of infidelity and everything, but these same kind of rules that you've thrown out there apply in basically all the relationships we have, whether it's with family members, work members, you know, neighbors, whatever. So I think people can apply these principles to all aspects of their life. I know I've been thankful to you. You've actually been talking with Linda for quite some while about some issues, you know, boundaries setting with her mother. So, you know, that's just an example that there's other aspects of our lives that we can use these fundamentals that you've set forth, you know, to help us along the way. So appreciate all that information. And
well, that's a great point, Doug, you know, because I mean, it's really about, you know, boundaries are part of every relationship, you know, whether it be with our, you know, spouse who betrayed us, or a sibling or a parent, or your children, I mean, or or your coworkers, or, you know, our relationship, you know, the one that you and I have. You know, we all need to, we all establish boundaries, you know, whether we state them or not, there are still boundaries. And there are some boundaries that are understood in relationships. But when there's a breach of trust, you know, where our life has been shattered, it's particularly important to, you know, get for the hurt partner to get stronger, you know, hopefully as quickly as they can, to get stronger and to get some help so that they can get to the place of you know, creating those healthy boundaries that protect them, whether they be, you know, as I say, the non-negotiable, the emotional or the physical / sexual mm-hmm. boundaries. You know, hopefully people will be mindful of that.
Absolutely. So wonderful. Well, hopefully what we've talked about today has been beneficial for people. And should somebody want to speak further with you about this or any other subject, how could they get a hold of you?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I hope people will take advantage of it. You know, whether they decide to sort of sign on and work with me, or they just have a question that they'd like to ask to get themselves unstuck or whatever, I certainly would welcome them reaching out to me. People can call me by phone. Phone number is 416-315-5107. They could send me an email at david@closeconnections.ca. That's closeconnections.ca. I guess that would be, you know, the two ways to reach me. They could also visit my website if they want a little bit more information. The website is closeconnections.ca, www.closeconnections.ca. And those would be the ways to reach me.
Awesome. David, thank you so much once again. I appreciate your expertise and all the great information you provide us. So take care of yourself.
You're very welcome.
Until we talk the next time.
Thanks a lot, Doug. You as well. All the very best. And
thanks
for the good work you do. Be well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.